What does Issues Etc. mean to you? Later this month, we'll celebrate the one-year anniversary of the return of Issues Etc., and we want to hear from you. Please leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. 618-223-8384. What does Issues Etc. mean to you? 618-223-8384.
If political elites want to break the law willy-nilly, they will be held accountable for all the violence and blood and rioting.
This is really, really unprecedented. People on the streets are shouting against the Supreme Leader. It's actually illegal to do that. People are imprisoned for doing that.
Many of our government's hardworking, patriotic public servants have long been denied basic rights for one simple reason. The people that they love are of the same sex.
Albert hits good pitches hard and bad pitches even harder when he gets in the batter's box. If you pray, then you start praying. And if you don't pray, you think about starting.
Southern Illinois truck drivers, we love Issues, etc.
Well, we tend to think about our times as the morally dissolute times, the pinnacle of moral disillusion. What do we face as societal ills? Just to name a few things in the 21st century America, we face a rampant pornography. We face abortion on demand. We face all sorts of things like drug use, sex trade, and it is all morally shocking. It should be to any sensible person. But is it only a problem of our day, of our age? We're going to be talking about lessons learned from a 19th century moral crusader. Dr. Alan Carlson will join us here for the first half hour or so of Issues Etc. on this Monday afternoon, June the 22nd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours of the program, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-IE, or you can email us right here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org. Dr. Alan Carlson will be our guest. First, from the Howard Center, then Mark Galley of Christianity Today magazine will join us. We're going to talk about a popular misquote, non-existent quote attributed to St. Francis of Assisi. It goes something like, always preach the gospel, use words if necessary. I've heard church leaders quote this thing, saying St. Francis of Assisi says, it's more about living the gospel than it is about speaking the gospel. Would Jesus concur, and did St. Francis of Assisi even say such a thing? Did he live that way? We'll answer that question with Mark Galley. Then some open lines. I know what I'll be watching tonight on TiVo after I get done with some churchly duties, John and Kate Plus Eight. They're barely into their fifth season, and they've had some record ratings, at least for the first couple episodes. Their marriage is falling apart. It's obvious to everyone. And it's so mixed up with the fact that their marriage has been on camera for the last 5 years, and their kids, that it's hard to sort it all out. I want to hear from you in about 25, 30 minutes here on Issues Etc., the future of John and Kate Plus A. What should happen with this now famous and extraordinary couple, given the fact that they have 8 kids at home? What do you think will happen if they divorce or separate? Will you still watch John and Kate Plus A? Will it hurt their viewership if they do? I want your answer to those questions. Audio open lines on the future of John and Kate Plus A. A little bit later in this hour of Issues Etc. In hour two of the program, Dr. Paul Vitz will join us from New York University. We'll talk about fatherhood and atheism. 1-877-623-6943 or talk back at issuesetc.org. Dr. Alan Carlson is president of the Howard Center in Rockford, Illinois, author of several books, including The Natural Family, A Manifesto. And he's written an article for the latest Touchstone magazine titled Pure Visionary, The Life and Times of Anthony Comstock, Moral Crusader. Dr. Carlson, welcome back.
Pleased to be with you.
We tend to think about the social ills of today, in particular things like pornography, sex trade, abortion on demand, as our problems of our late 20th, early 21st century America. Is that true?
Really not. No, we're the... last 4 or 5 decades of the 19th century faced almost exactly the same problem, but they dealt with them differently. For example, pornography. The invention of the techniques for printing photographs and distributing them widely. Also, the invention of vulcanized rubber. The entrepreneurs of the sex trade in the 19th century quickly figured out ways to turn these things into profit. Pornography, pornographic books, was spreading rapidly, particularly during and after the Civil War. Abortion. Now, it was illegal in many states, but the laws were largely unenforced. Abortionists operated openly. Their advertisements could be found in just about every newspaper and magazine, sometimes with slightly veiled language. Even Christian leaders estimated that one-third of the pregnancies occurring among Christian women, this would be in the 1850s and 1860s, one-third of the pregnancies were ending in abortion. Contraception. New techniques were spreading rapidly at the time. The birth rate was plummeting in the United States. Gambling, illegal gambling, again, spreading rapidly and wildly, particularly through the numbers game. Little consumer protection, quack medicines, most of which were at best ineffective, many of which were poisons, spreading rapidly. All that in the latter part of the 19th century.
So what is it about the post-Civil War era that as far as we can tell from history, brought all of this about and then introduce, if you would, Anthony Comstock in that time?
Well, again, partly new technologies. That was critical to this. Partly, though, just the war always has an upsetting effect on social mores and social values. The Civil War, we forget what a massive loss of life took place compared to the population. It would be hard for us to even imagine it. Something similar today. It would be the loss of, say, 20 million American citizens in a war. It would be something similar or something equivalent. All of this had a deeply upsetting effect on social life, social mores, and it led to an opening. Anthony Comstock was himself a veteran of the Civil War. He served in a Connecticut regiment. He came out of the war, wound up moving to New York City from a farm background, was shocked and appalled by the corruptions that awaited young men as they came into New York City, exploding numbers of houses of prostitution, ever-growing numbers of bars and gambling casinos. The pornography trade was openly taking place on the streets of New York. And he found some direction by joining the YMCA, the Young Men's Christian Association, which was then a young, aggressive, evangelical group committed in part to protecting the young men from these moral corruptions that they would find when they came to the city.
I guess I got to ask, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but the YMCA of today is hardly the same entity that it was when Anthony Comstock found some compatriots and some like-minded fellow travelers then.
Well, that's certainly true. I mean, at best today, it's something of an athletic club. And at worst, maybe it's not even that. But in the late 19th century, it was the red-hot core of the evangelical cause in America. Highly moralistic, highly effective, and actually prepared and ready to go to unusual ends to try to battle all of these new forces that were afflicting American life.
What did Comstock, what was his first reaction post-war to what he saw in New York City and elsewhere in the country by way of these social ills?
Well, his most immediate reaction is one of his friends in a rooming house in New York picked up or purchased a pornographic book at a bookshop in New York, read it, visited a prostitute, contracted a venereal disease, and Comstock blamed the book merchants. And so actually, just on his own, basically, using laws that had been unenforced in New York City, he went after the four major porn dealers in New York, the publishers, who published together about 150 books, and forcing the police, basically, through the use of citizen arrests, also mobilizing the press of his time. He would encourage reporters to come with him on these raids that he would do. He basically shut down the New York pornography industry over a matter of just a few years. The three of the four principal publishers, in the first year in which Comstock went after them, they tried to bribe him. He refused to take bribes. Eventually, after just a year, all three of the four died. Now, their friends blame Comstock for worrying them to death. Comstock, again, in a fairly typical reaction that he would have, said that's the world's better off without them. That's too bad. A man with fearless, a man totally committed to the suppression of vice, and that's, again, marked his career that would go on for another close to 45 years.
Was it simply a man who was alarmed by the moral dissolution of his society, of American society, or did he have a broader way of looking at these things?
Well, he was raised in a devout evangelical family, born in 1844 in Connecticut. We kind of forget today that back then Connecticut was seen as the most conservative of the American states. The old congregational churches were still seen as bastions of the evangelical faith coming out of the Second Great Awakening. And Comstock was raised by a devout mother who shaped his character, as he would later say. He was probably never attended college. He basically went through high school, had a high school education, but became a fairly effective writer, and in fact wrote several best-selling books. But he was his theology was not sophisticated, but it would be a mistake to call it simple. Issues of abortion and contraception, for example, he simply defended the historic Christian understanding that both were sin and sinful, and that they should, there was nothing wrong with suppressing them, using law to suppress contraception and abortion.
Let's talk about that on the other side of the break. Dr. Alan Carlson is our guest. We are walking through a few lessons learned from a 19th century moral crusader, Anthony Comstock. Sounds an awful lot like our day. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-6943. My IE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. It's Issues Etc. live Monday afternoon, the 22nd of June. Stay tuned. On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring Issues Etc. back. Bill and Ruth Helgemo, Rita McGrow, David Lewis, Pastor Lee Stisser, William Rutherford, Matthew Bobby, Linda John, Mr. and Mrs. DeMonico, Mrs. Heron, and Jan Erickson. Thanks for your support.
We at NewReformationPress.com are committed to providing a hand-picked selection of books and teaching materials that educate, inform, and entertain while relentlessly focusing on the gospel. Discover our growing library of resources by Dr. Rod Rosenblatt of the White Horse Inn radio program, including his powerful address, The Gospel for Those Broken by the Church, or Bible in an Hour by Pastor Wade Butler. And be sure not to miss our selection of t-shirts, gifts, and artwork. NewReformationPress.com. Finally, Reformation theology made accessible.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. Trinity Lutheran, Bridgeton, Missouri. Calvary Lutheran, Elgin, Illinois. Advent Lutheran, Zionsville, Indiana. Redeemer Lutheran, Fort Worth, Texas. Holy Cross Lutheran, Albany, Oregon. St. John's Lutheran, Evanston, Indiana. Mount Calvary Lutheran, San Antonio, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Boise, Idaho, Village Lutheran, Ladue, Missouri, Emmanuel Lutheran, Osceola, Iowa, St. Paul Lutheran, Clarinda, Iowa, Trinity Lutheran, Lebanon, Missouri, Mount Calvary Lutheran, Excelsior Springs, Missouri, the Lutheran Church of Our Savior, Cupertino, California, Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Freeburg, Illinois, and Peace Lutheran, Neenah, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in its mission or advertising budget. Our website, issuesetc.org. Click Promote. The Issues Etc. 300.
We haven't really known where we were going, but we've been dealing with this for a long time. A slow progression that has not popped up one day. It's not been like a secret.
It just got worse and worse and worse. And with all the tabloid and all that, it just made it even worse.
We can't go back now. We can only go forward. And that's what we're going to do. And we're going to learn a lot going forward. And I know that we'll all come out of this on the other side, hopefully stronger, better, wiser.
People think I've changed, and I have changed. But I'm now the person I know I am.
And we've been dealing a long time with this.
John and Kate Plessiat is on tonight, and a lot of people are going to be tuning in to find out what happens to their marriage and, of course, then also their family. And I wonder about the show, too. What is the future of this program, given the fact that due to the fact that when you have reality television in your house every day, it affects things. The medium is the message. What do you think should happen with John and Kate? What do you think will happen? And if they divorce or separate, will you still be watching this very popular show on Monday nights? In about 20 minutes, Open Lines, The Future of John and Kate Plus 8 here on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Dr. Alan Carlson. Lessons Learned from a 19th Century Moral Crusader is our subject. Dr. Carlson, you were talking before about the suppression legislatively of some of the things that nowadays it's almost unthinkable legislatively to try and suppress these things. But there were even in time in this Moral Crusader's life things called the Comstock Laws. How did he go from, you know, a boarding house, a dry goods clerk, to being able to push legislation through even to the president's desk for signatures?
Well, he was a remarkably effective advocate. It's the only way to describe it. I can find no one even anywhere near his equal. He was appointed, became a full-time employee of the YMCA in 1873, and about 2 months later he went down to Washington, D.C. to get a bill, a federal bill, that would prohibit the mailing or distribution or import of any pornographic book or any item or product that would in any way affect, cause an abortion or prohibit conception, that is a contraceptive. In an amazing 2 months of active lobbying where he mobilized not only Supreme Court justices, the Vice President of the United States, the leaders of the House and Senate, pushed his bill through, and it was signed the same day it was passed by the Senate by President U.S. Grant. The New York Times praised it for finally the Congress was finally doing something to protect the women and children of America. He was a man of courage, again, a man of conviction. He had to have been tremendously persuasive. And also when he went down to Washington, he took with him a cabinet of seized documents, seized pictures, seized books, and seized immoral items, sometimes not described beyond that, to show to the members of Congress about what was spreading through the mails in the U.S. Congress responded. Eventually, all but two of the states in the United States had a mini Comstock law active, including the state of Connecticut, where a figure such as P.T. Barnum, the old showman, the Sixth Circus Man, was now in the state legislature, actually guided the strong Connecticut law through Congress, through the state legislature. Again, one approval appears unanimously.
So two final questions here, Dr. Carlson. How is it that today so few know the name of Anthony Comstock?
Well, he, on the one hand, mainstream American history treats him as a ridiculous figure, as a buffoon, as a crazy man, as a fanatic. The only people, frankly, who take him seriously, and you still read reasonably good accounts of what he did, have been on the left, particularly the sexual left. There's a book published around the year 2000 by the Playboy Press called The Century of Sex, History of the Sex Revolution of the 20th Century. Comstock is portrayed as the chief enemy against which the Playboy philosophy was working and Comstock's legacy. But again, on the political right, almost no memory of him, almost no recognition. When his name pops up, it's often to ridicule him for somehow seeing birth control as something wrong. And that's even on the political right. So we live in a very different country, I guess was what I would conclude.
If we were able to give him a glimpse of 21st century America, how would you summarize what you think Anthony Comstock's take on our world today would be?
Well, I think he'd be fairly appalled at the way the country operates. He would also see, I think, his own worst assumptions, well, almost fears being fulfilled. I think he would argue that allowing married couples to gain access to birth control would have inevitably led to the unmarried gaining access, and eventually adolescents and children. He would be appalled that evangelical leaders in the 20th century, evangelical Protestants, threw their lot with Margaret Sanger in order to legalize birth control. He would have pointed that getting birth control would never be enough for the leaders of the sexual revolution. They must also have abortion. And everywhere they've won the birth control battle, they have also won the abortion battle. He would show that allowing free speech and a free press and sexual matters would inevitably lead to the sewer of pornography. He would even not be surprised to see the internet becoming a primary kind of a open sewer running into most American homes right now. And he probably would be grimly amused to see same-sex marriage as an issue. In fact, the one issue that social conservatives seem to be still battling today, having lost most of the others. So I think he would conclude that, again, America today was a very different place from the land that he was in 100 years ago.
Folks, you'll find a link to the Howard Center for Family, Religion, and Society under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Dr. Alan Carlson is president of the Howard Center in Rockford, Illinois. He's author of several books, including The Natural Family, A Manifesto, and he's written an article in the latest Touchstone magazine titled Pure Visionary, The Life and Times of Anthony Comstock, Moral Crusader. Dr. Carlson, thank you again for your time.
I've always enjoyed being with you.